Good evening, everyone, and welcome to yet another fantastic episode of Fandom Access. I am your ever-faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. So, Jamie has something pressing she could not get out of, so it's just me and Karen tonight, but we have now got a full show for you tonight. Westworld, season finale of Moonhaven, The Sandman, Paper Girls, and whatever else we can think of. We got some stuff ending because next week we're adding that other show that I can't think of the name of. Lock and Key. Well, we're adding Lock and Key next week. And looky, here's Karen. Good evening.
Hello. Good evening, AJ, and everyone out there in the podcast land. How are you?
I am good.
Yeah, good.
Ready to start talking all our umpteenth hundreds of shows.
Yeah.
It's funny how quickly we go from having, like, down to two shows, and we're like, oh, my God, we have nothing to talk about, and now we're like, holy crap, we have so much to talk about.
I know, right? And so much of it is multiple episodes that I guess we'll just take.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I blame that on the streaming services, because if the streaming services didn't release everything at – and Amazon's the worst, because – some shows they release weekly and other shows they release all at once. There's no rhyme or reason to what they're going to do. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the stuff that's getting dumped all at once is fine to like burn through, but other stuff, like I feel like some shows still benefit from having time to think,
yes.
Okay, so Westworld didn't come all at once,
like
but a show like a Westworld, yeah.
Exactly.
It's great to have a whole week to talk about. To think about it, because what's going on there. And something like Sandman, I think while it's all out and we are going to talk about two episodes tonight, Sandman might be a thing that, I mean, it depends how they do it, but it could be a thing that could benefit from, you know, mulling it over a little bit. Although that's not happening, right? Anyhow, which one would you like to dive into?
I don't care. You want to Moonhaven since it's the finale?
Oh, my God. Since it's so terrible? Yeah.
Not what I said.
In fact, I just watched it yesterday, and I kind of, like, can't even remember what happened because it this show does not hold my attention very well. Like, it was a season finale, and I can't remember the cliffhanger being any different from last week, which was, like, the ships are taking off, heading to Earth, and Tom and his people, like, are kind of planning to kill them all when they arrive, right? Like, Moonhaven,
yeah.
Like, what happens on Moonhaven? Like, I just watched it yesterday. I can't remember what happened. I mean, there was a lot of, like... there's a lot of Bella, like, running around and sneaking around in the woods and trying to, like, you know, spy on Tom and whatever. But there was no, I don't know, to me, there was no real, I don't know. How did you like it?
Well, I didn't hate it. I mean, I feel like Moonhaven definitely got better as it went on.
Okay.
I actually thought Tom's plan, once we understood Tom's plan, it actually was a pretty good plan. I don't know his motivation or why he wants to do this, but the plan itself is pretty sound. You know,
which part of the plan? The part where people run their bloodlines and turn on each other, or which is kind of iffy in my opinion.
Now, the plan of manipulating the Mooners by sacrificing some of them, making them think, oh, my God, these Earthlings are terrible. Like, you know, the Earthers are awful. They killed all our people. We, you know, and you know, and that aspect of it, I think is, now don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's something I would do, or I think it's a good thing, but it's a smart plan. It's a good way to manipulate people, you know, in a situation. You know, he just makes Earth look, for whatever his motives are, it makes Earth look awful, and nobody is going to want to help Earth if all their, you know, if all their, it looks like they're conspiring to kill all their people.
And it's kind of not that difficult to plan, because it's something we talked about earlier in the season, like before we even knew of his plan or that it had a plan.
Yeah.
We were like, gee, how are these like hippies going to cut it on Earth, which is a hellscape right now, apparently, right?
What'd you think about the twist that Indira has been working with Tom this whole time?
So that was a big twist, and I didn't see that coming, so I think that was kind of I don't know. I feel like it's a good and well-concealed part of the story, although I suppose there are those who would say, gee, you didn't, like, foreshadow at all. It was just kind of dropped on us, right?
I don't feel like it was dropped on us, though. I feel like it was hinted at, but not really. Like, they get another flashback to her when she was a kid, you know, and a lot of shows do this where they're like, you get pieces of things, and it's not until the reveal that you see the rest of the flashback, and it's not what you think it was.
Yeah.
No motive, though.
No, I mean, she has come across, to me, she has come across as kind of shifty and untrustworthy the whole time, right?
Yeah.
And I think to Bella, so, I mean, there's that. But, yeah, no motivation really at all for why she did that. I mean, still a good twist, but I don't really like Tom. So Tom, he's unlikable, right? He's supposed to be unlikable. He's supposed to be a jerk. But it makes it harder for me to have any sympathy with, I mean, I guess we're not supposed to have any sympathy for him and the rebels and what they're trying to do at all, right? Because you and I are from Earth and we want Earth to be saved. I'm not really sure how the two parts of his plan go together, right? Like, revealing the family tree and letting everybody, like, find out who their blood family is, like that is going to cause havoc maybe on the, I don't know, like, that seems like a leap, but we're told that's going to cause havoc on the moon, right? But why is he trying to, like, if his plan is to save and preserve what they've got on the moon and, like, go to hell with Earth, right? Like, how does sowing chaos on the moon? I don't know, right? Like, I can see he wants to kill the first wave to have the moon be like, to hell with Earth, we have our own perfect society up here, let's keep the moon for ourselves. But sowing chaos with the family tree, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand it either.
That.
I mean, it seems to me like they want to control Io. And I don't understand what controlling Io is going to do to make their life better. I don't know. I'm really not.
Well, I mean, I think that's what Tom wants because like after the reveal with Indira, she thinks they're taking over the moon. That's like me talking to him about taking over the moon. Talking about taking over the moon, but he says, like, we need to think bigger, right? Like, he wants to take over Io, although there's also this, like, little thing that Mighty thinks there's aliens. So is that really what he's...
Right.
We don't know.
But that's what Mighty thinks.
Well, she's a kook, right? Well, everyone's a kook. Everyone on the moon is a kook, but she's definitely a kook. I'm kind of disappointed they didn't really, like, address that at all in this episode. Like, we didn't really learn, we learned zero about what happened to Mighty and who that wild boy kid is with the glowing eyes and who, like, none of that was any part of this.
Yeah.
So
my biggest question is, why do shows have such a hard time writing the story itself and writing for adults, but they nail the kids? Elma is, the past couple episodes, and especially in the finale, the best character.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you on that, yeah.
I mean, how many shows do we talk about how great the kids are and how awful the adults are?
Yeah. Yeah. She is by far the best character. I'd be more interested to see, like, what she does, especially if she's just a little older and could really, like, do something. But, you know. The adults, yeah. I understand her, like, her. First of all, the kid's a great actress, right? The kid's a great actor. And the scenes are all well written. I hadn't really thought about that until you just brought it up. She is like one of the characters who she shows like true emotion, and it doesn't bother me so much that she speaks in a silly fashion. Maybe because she's speechless.
Maybe.
But yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know that I just didn't like this show the whole season, right? So.
Well, yeah, I didn't either. I mean, those first, I really struggled through those first two episodes, and even the third episode was kind of like, all right, it's getting a little better. It definitely progressively got better. I wouldn't be against. I mean, if season two's six episodes again, I wouldn't be against seeing how the first episode goes, and going from there.
Yeah.
Because I gotta say, yeah, I thought you told us it got renewed.
Yeah, I think I did tell you that. Yeah.
But I mean, I gotta think Kadeem Hardison was such a highlight, and then and even, you know, Dominic Monaghan, I Paul kinda grew on me, and I really liked that conversation actually with him and his wife at the end there, where she kind of, you know, he's always the one preaching moving forward and everything, and she kind of turns it on him and is like, you know, you're so worried about everybody else around you, you just do such a great job getting people where they need to be, but you don't pay attention to what you yourself are becoming because you're still living in the past of yourself, you know. And basically what she's telling him is, you're the leader. You're the leader of this community. You are the one that's going to, you know, right the ship here. And I can see that, too, with the way things have been progressing. So I thought that was a really great conversation between the two of them that, you know, she's right. You know, he sees everything else for everybody, but that's true of most people. You know, you're great at giving, somebody's great at giving advice about relationships for, you know, everybody else, their 10 friends, and their 10 friends are happily married, yet they're in a shitty relationship because they don't know how to do it for themselves.
Yeah.
It's
unfortunate that that is kind of like the first conversation those characters have had of any kind of real conversation, right? Like, we've seen them in scenes together, but they haven't really ever talked. I mean, we also saw Paul speak a little bit to the long-haired guy who's like the other husband in their polygamous household or whatever's going on there.
Actually, I'm not even sure what the hell the deal there is, but I'm still confused about how the family dynamic works.
I'm not sure if, like, it's polygamy.
I feel like he's
a
cool uncle.
No, but he's sleeping with the wife, right? That's why Paul hates him.
Is he?
Yeah, I think he's the wife's other partner.
All right, that's the thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Because it's not clear.
I think she has two partners. And Paul is not down with that. Paul's struggling with that. But it's not, it's weird because it's not like, it's not known to us that that's a thing on the moon and that other people have multiple spouses in their household in that way. And sometimes it feels to me like the wife is test driving this guy and she might leave Paul and just like be with this guy. Whose name I can't remember because he really has never spoken much until this episode, right? Where he became like a person all of a sudden.
I can't remember his name either.
I can't either, but like Paul has a conversation with him and it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's something that maybe should have happened like three episodes ago, so I could like not be distracted by this relationship in the show. I can't believe we're talking about that and that I even noticed that, because again, like, this is a show that I watch while I'm like doing other things, right? I might be like reading something or, I don't know, zoning out, thinking about something else. I don't think that they have earned a second season, even though they got it. And I don't know if they would have gotten a second season on another network, but AMC, you know,
right,
quick usually to renew. And I think they are looking hard for another like big show. Oh, and this is on AMC Plus, so they need to anchor their, they need to have stuff on their streaming
right.
service, right? Would it have gotten renewed if it was on the air, on the television? Maybe not.
Right, probably not.
There's just, I mean, overall, I felt like, you know, I express constant problems with this hippy dippy stuff all the time, but I mean, one thing that really bothers me about
your fast forward button got a workout.
It did. Whereas on other shows, it's my rewind button that gets a workout, because I'm like, what just happened on Westworld? Let me rewind that, right? One reason that stuff bothers me is because it just feels gimmicky and at the expense of the characters, like, having conversations and expressing motivation. Like, we have like, 5 minutes of hippy-dippy dancing when a character could have been explaining their motivation, or they could have been laying some groundwork
right.
for the Indira reveal, or they could have, like, you know, like we wouldn't have, like, there's so much exposition on the show, right? Characters telling you, like, what they're about to do or why they're doing what they're doing, which... like, we could have learned if we weren't dancing in a circle and putting our mother in a tree. Although I did appreciate that,
yeah.
that, you know, the mother in the hammock nursing home was a horrible thing, but it actually came back, I think it was in this episode, it wasn't last week, it was this episode, right, where Paul says, like, I felt the blood relationship when I spoke to my mother for, like, the first time ever, right?
Right.
I think he says it in this episode that he mentions that he really,
yeah,
like,
it was this episode.
Like, he felt something there. And you could see it. You could see it on Dominic Monaghan's face when that scene occurred. I don't know. I find it hard to believe that knowing who your blood relatives are, like, will destroy their civilization. And that it was ever really the key to... we've talked about this, that, like, people can, like, have adoptive families or be absorbed into families, and I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just think it's dumb, and I don't really know, like, I don't really see also,
well,
like, were those people going to come down to Earth and convince 7 billion people that knowing your family was really a bad idea and we should all leave it behind? Like, that's how is that any kind of a storyline that could ever play out, right?
I'm not even sure what the goal of the Mooners going to Earth is. Like, I'm not even sure what they're supposed to do when they get there.
Right, because
like,
if they were supposed to be bringing their technology, why are they sending a bunch of, like, children down, and why don't they just send there?
That's what I'm saying. A lot of the motivation of the show is completely lost on me. Because
yeah.
they never really explain... They do a lot of, this is what we're doing, but never the why we're doing it. So.
Yeah.
So.
They never, yeah.
So. Maybe.
So.
We'll see what happens next year. So quick question, because I just realized something. Did you watch AHS this week?
We forgot to watch it this week. All right.
We'll double up on it next week. This week's
mm-hmm.
episode was not great. It was not. There's not really a lot to talk about, and like I said, it wasn't great. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. Bella Thorne was in the episode, so that was like the
yeah.
highlight of the episode, was the fact that Bella Thorne was in it.
All right. Well, we won't
so
have
we'll,
Moonhaven.
We'll have that for next week.
Okay.
Yeah, but we
All
will
right.
have Lock and Key.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm just,
so
yeah, there is. Like,
tomorrow.
I only saw him.
Actually, I think
I
it started today.
Oh, yeah?
I think Lock and Key came out today.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yeah, Wednesday, you probably did. All right. We'll add that for next week.
Westworld.
All right, so on to Westworld. Ooh, Westworld, boy. Some people think this is the best season, and some people think this is the worst.
I feel like you have feelings, Karen. I think you have feelings, Karen. Let's hear them.
I have feelings like, what the hell is going on? I have feelings like when you kill off every major character, like, there's a part of me that's like, they just killed all the major characters, right? Like, on the one hand, like, what could possibly happen next week? I mean, I understand that. Okay, so on Westworld, no one's ever really dead. Like, Maeve was dead and brought back to life last week. So Maeve could be brought back to life next week. We also saw multiple versions of Maeve in this episode, including one that was a simulation in the Sublime, right? So for all those people to be killed, except for human William to be killed, he can't come back, right? He's the last human on the show, except for Frankie, right? But we don't care about Frankie because she's new. Like, William is the last human from season one or two. So he can't come back. But anyone who's a host, who's a robot, can totally come back next week, right? Like, so this business of Westworld, like, keeping playing the big reveals from previous seasons, like, killing people becomes less and less interesting year after year after year as they keep coming back and coming back. So what are the stakes of all them being killed? Like, do we really believe that none of them will be back next week or next year? No, right? So I guess I'm getting a little tired of the loops in some ways, right? There is a part of me that is like, okay, so they killed everybody off because the beginning was the Man in Black and Dolores, and the end is going to be the Man in Black and Dolores, maybe, right? So that's kind of cool, I guess, right?
That's kind of what I was thinking. I gotta say, those deaths with William or Man in Black shooting, I thought that was really well done because I was enjoying the fight between Hale and Maeve, and to see Maeve all of a sudden just out of nowhere get shot, I was like, holy crap! Like, I actually, like, audibly, like, gasped. I was like, because I was not, you know, no way you could see that coming. I kind of had a feeling, though, that he was going to shoot Hale. That I felt was kind of obvious the way he was talking to her. And given the conversation between Man in Black and William, I kind of had a feeling that was where it was going. And then as soon as he shot Hale, though, I started thinking, you know, you already know Bernard's already been foreshadowed that Bernard's not going to make it. Bernard has pretty much told Stubbs, I'm going to go die. So when this all happened, then I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, see where this is kind of going, you know, it's going to go down to the last battle between the Man in Black and Dolores, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the problem is, now, the show has not been renewed yet.
Right.
But I did hear something about an interview with Ed Harris, and based on that interview, it's just a matter of time before they announce it. But where else can this show go? Like, end it now. Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll find out what the finale looks like. Because I will say this. Every sequel, not so much season two, but season three ended with a way that if it did not get renewed for season four, that was a good ending. I was okay with it. It was over. Now, this season, I don't know how it's going to end on Sunday, but does it maybe hopefully end in a way that I'm okay if season five doesn't come around? I'm hoping season five doesn't happen. I don't know what else they can do. Like, this, if this were to be the last season, I feel like this next to last episode of the season was a really good episode coming down to the wire. You know, if this is just the season finale, it's kind of redundant.
Yeah.
Series finale good.
You.
Season finale dumb.
Yeah. I don't need to see another season of this because, you know, I'm not one of the people who thinks this is the best season. There have been some good, and I mean, it's gotten better than it was in the beginning. I'm a little frustrated with some things going on right now. I also don't know where it could possibly go. I mean, like, we're talking right now about the complete destruction of both species was discussed in this episode, right? How do you up the stakes next season? I think it could get canceled. I had also seen that Ed Harris was interviewed and talked about, you know, there being one more season. I know that the creators had originally talked about a 6-season plan. Was the original
really?
The original,
that was
idea.
The original plan,
yeah.
6 seasons?
I've heard
Dear
that.
God.
I don't know if I've heard that recently, but I know the original plan was 6 seasons. But I mean, the ratings are not good for the ratings have gone down every season, which happens with most shows, with a lot of shows, right?
Yeah.
Not with most shows, but they're the lowest right now ratings. The ratings are the lowest they have been, and I think we need to keep in mind the utter carnage going on at HBO Discovery since the Time Warner merger, right? And
there is that. But Westworld is an HBO show, not an HBO Max show. So believe it or not, it's actually safer than most shows.
Because it's HBO. Because it runs on your television, not just on the streamer.
It's not an HBO Max original. HBO Max originals are the ones that are in trouble.
All right. Warner wrote off hundreds of millions of dollars of movies, right, that they didn't want. It's not just Batgirl, it's multiple movies that they axed. Who knows what's gonna happen. They also, you know, it was Warner who killed Snowpiercer. I mean, I think we agree that Snowpiercer only needed one
thing.
More season, and this season was already, I think this season was already shot, and then they were like, okay, after the merger, they were like, they decided this would be the last season, which is fine. You and I agree. It was
an
artistic
about
decision.
That.
But it is a good artistic decision. I'm happy too. But like, it's a hugely expensive show to make, right? I'm not saying I know anything about the inner workings over there, but like, the ratings are down, and I don't know what's safe over there, right? I don't need to see another season of it. So a couple things. So I agree with you. I really enjoyed the fight between Maeve and Charlotte. That was a highlight that has been coming for a long time, right? And that was really gratifying to see until they both got shot in the head by William. Not surprising that William killed her. Like, after human William and host William have their conversation, and even before then, like, you can see that William is not down with Charlotte's decision to close down the cities and...
No.
We don't know what she means by transcending. I thought she was going to take them all to Sublime, but it looks like she's putting them into white.
I still don't know what it means.
They're going to all get uploaded into a white robot with no arms?
Yeah.
And
I didn't understand it at all. I was completely confused.
No, and you know, something bad happened after I saw that, because I started thinking about Charlotte's entire plan and her entire setup here, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, she says I want to shut down the cities, and she turns on this like machine to make everybody go insane, and I thought about some things we haven't really discussed that much, which is like, so she turned all 7 billion humans on the planet into robots, or did she annihilate everybody except for New York City, or and how many of these did she build? And like, so right now I'm sitting in a house that is 35 miles from New York City, and I don't think you could hear a huge tower from here because it goes by sound, right? You'd be able to hear it. So would she have to build one in North Jersey and Central Jersey and set like every 30 miles? Is there a tower? Like, I started thinking about all this in my head, and I was like, oh, my God, you have to stop, right? You're thinking about it more than the creators thought about it. and it doesn't really matter. But I got a little, I sort of got off track here. But anyway, you could see William wasn't happy with that idea, and it wasn't a surprise that William killed her, and I was kind of glad because we hate her, right? Charlotte is bad. Charlotte, bad guy. And not just a bad guy, but Charlotte, we talked last week about how she's become really cruel, and she's really a lot like, she's become what she hated, right? She's a lot like, I can't remember Anthony Hopkins' character's name, but she's a lot like him. She's a lot like original William. Like, she's become, I guess there's some sort of lesson here about, like, becoming a god and like, not being really, you think you're a benevolent god, but you're really not, and is it possible to be anything else? Right? But, yeah, I don't know. I thought they were going to search the sublime, which, I don't know. Then come to find out that a bunch of this is happening. So how about the whole simulation thing where Bernard is talking to Maeve and it turns out that it's a simulation? I felt like that set up some things later.
I had a feeling it was.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some things about it that were not, like Maeve was a little off, right? And then they saw repetition. But it set up for me later in the episode, there were things that I'm like, wait, is this a simulation? This is a simulation, right? This is not a simulation. Like, what is happening? Including parts of Bernard, when Bernard goes into Olympiad and he goes upstairs and, you know, that like red model of the city that Charlotte has, like when he's there, I'm like, is this a simulation? And then he was looking at like a tablet and I was like, wait, is he watching the city? Like how much that was a simulation? And then like when I rewound it, I saw some stuff, some details in that scene, which I don't know what you want to say about that scene before I, like, did you think any of it's a simulation? I think it might be a simulation.
I hope it's not, because I'm not watching a simulation. I'm watching a damn TV show. I don't have a problem with the first part being a simulation, but if you're going to tell me the whole episode was a simulation, that I'd have a big, huge, giant problem with.
So here's the thing. When William shoots Bernard...
Speaking of Bernard, though. Yeah.
You want to go ahead first?
Shoot Bernard.
Come up.
No, go ahead.
What? When William shoots Bernard,
ahead.
It's daylight. If you look out the windows, you can see that it's daylight out the windows when he shoots him. And, you know, then they cut to William talking. And when they cut back to Bernard laying on the floor, like about to die, it's nighttime outside the windows.
I didn't notice that.
When I rewound it, I was like, what? And I just watched it yesterday, so I rewound it, and I was like, what's going on? And then, of course, I Googled it, and then, like, other people, like, online were like, oh, yeah, did you notice that?
I did notice.
What does that mean?
One thing I did notice in the episode, and it got me thinking, actually, does Bernard know about Dolores? Like, all the simulations and everything, does he know about her? Because she's the reason that everything Stubbs and Frankie did. They did because Dolores shut everything down. That's how they were able to get in. So I'm wondering, does Bernard even know about what Dolores' part in all this is? And I'm sure you caught that Dolores and Teddy, the stuff they were doing.
Yeah.
I don't know how much sooner, but I'd say they were at least an hour ahead of everybody else. Because there's that one scene where they go down through the doorway or down the hall or whatever it was, and then immediately Stubbs and Frankie come through the other way. Like,
oh,
from
yeah.
the same
yeah.
spot.
When,
like,
when they're in
seconds.
The building, when they're all in the building together.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not
yeah.
together.
That's
right?
how you know that. That's how you know Dolores and Teddy are on a different timeline than the rest of them at that point.
Right.
And then, of course, the biggest part of the episode is when Teddy tells Dolores she's not really there, or no, he doesn't
real,
say that she's
not
there. Yeah, that's what he says.
They can't see you because
what
this world is real,
but
you're
does
not.
That mean?
Well, it could be that they're a simulation, that Dolores is in a simulation, right?
No, the world is real. But if the world is real and she's not, then I don't know what the fuck that means.
Well,
that
could
just totally
she be, okay, not in a simulation, but you know that thing that they do with the host where they're sitting in a chair and like when they're doing, what do they call it, like a, not a reality check, but you know like Bernard used to sit in a chair and talk to the host.
Yeah, I know what you
and
mean.
Be like,
yeah.
Like, could we, everything we saw with him been part of like her system check and she's really sitting in a chair somewhere, or is she in a simulation because she's not really did Bernard, is this part of Bernard's simulation? Like, is this, like you're saying, does Bernard know she exists or not? Like what Bernard saw, right? You know what I mean? Like, is it,
well,
is it,
but here's the thing, up to that point, until
Teddy
tells her that.
Then Teddy would be a program that Bernard wrote to go in and, like, talk to her or rescue her or something.
Yeah, but the thing is, but the thing is, when did she not become real? Because up to that point, she was telling people to go home and to do this and to do that. And then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. And now she's not real?
Well,
or was
because,
she not in the real... Yeah.
Because it was always a simulation, and so they were listening to her because it wasn't real, because it was simulated that it was real. I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm hurting my brain now. I can't carry my theory out far enough to make sense. But I think, like, he says, you're not real, makes me think she's not in a body. She's in a simulation, just like when Maeve and Bernard were in the simulation, you could say she wasn't real then, right?
Right, but that's the thing. If she's in the simulation, then nothing's real.
Okay, but it is a representation of a world that is actually real. Like it is, like, she's in a simulation of stuff that is real, like, the streets are real. The officers
but
are real.
That,
the stuff is
but,
real.
But that
she's not
but that
real.
But that wouldn't make anything around her real. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's the way you're saying it. Because if she's in the simulation, nothing is real.
Yeah.
Just like when Bernard was in the simulation, nothing. That's why Bernard was able to do all those simulations, because nothing was actually real. He just kept redoing it.
But it's all a duplication of real stuff. The dam really exists. It's a perfect recreation.
Right.
It's a perfect simulation of the dam. So it's a perfect simulation of the world, except there is no robot Dolores. Okay, here's a major flaw in my theory here. If she doesn't really exist and she's only like a little bit of computer program and not a real person, or she's in the Sublime or whatever, then what is the point? Because the stakes are real on the outside world, and we need her to be able to, like, fight for real, right? Like, we need her to come face-to-face with William, not to be a simulation. Right?
Yeah, the whole thing is...
So was Teddy speaking more, like, metaphorically, like, you're not real because you're a robot. You think you're a human, but you're actually a robot. You're not real. Maybe that's what he meant. But why they can't see you? That's easy, because... Well, it's not easy, but you know how they can't see the tower? Like, only the humans that, like, rebel and become, like, self-aware and break free can see the tower.
Right.
That, right? So, maybe, I don't know. Actually, can we go back to my problem? I've got another problem that I, with this tower.
Go for it.
How come, so when they send out, like, the kill message, or, like, okay, this is the dumbest plan ever. Like Charlotte wants to shut down the cities, and I thought her plan was to save the robots and help them evolve, but her plan is for everyone, humans and robots, to fight to the death, and whoever is left standing gets
that
to...
That's Man in Black's plan.
That's Man in Black's plan. Man in Black wants them all... Okay, that also is, like, it's kind of a stupid plan and a stupid evolution for him. Like, look, I thought Ed Harris was great in this episode, and apparently the episode where he talks to himself, right, was like, Ed Harris is incredible, not saying anything about the work that he's done was amazing in this entire show and this episode. It's kind of a dumb plan. First of all, if it's like a battle royale, there can be only one, right? Like, won't they keep fighting to the death until nobody's left or one is left? Like, I'm not sure what the outcome is. I'm not sure what that plan is. I'm also not sure if he sends out the kill code over the, he sends out this message over the tower for them all to, like, fight to the death. Why is Stubbs not affected? Why is Caleb not affected? They're robots. I can see why C/Frankie is not affected because she doesn't have the little thingy in her arm. She doesn't have the flies never went inside of her to infest her, right?
Right.
The thing in your arm is from Moonhaven.
Yeah, I kind of wondered that myself about Stubbs and Caleb, too.
And Bernard.
The only thing I can think of is the new batch of, well, see, Caleb's the one that is the real problem, because Stubbs and Bernard can be explained because they weren't created by Hale. They were from the old school, you know what I mean?
Right.
So maybe
Stubbs,
Hale
I think,
also
I
did.
Think Stubbs is first generation, right? I think Stubbs has never died, ever.
Yeah, Stubbs is first generation. So, Hale's hosts have a little something extra in them. You know what I mean?
Like a receiver to receive the code or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the humans have the flags in them.
But Caleb doesn't make sense because Caleb was created by Hale. Unless she just didn't bother, you know. But that doesn't make sense because why wouldn't she want him completely...
And Teddy and Christina, if they are real robots, why are they unaffected, right? Because Hale is aware of Christina and came and had lunch with her to keep her eye on her, right? Although that also could have been a simulation, right? Like, she put Dolores in a simulation and was just checking in on her, but I don't know.
You know what, Karen? I hope all these theories are completely wrong, because I'm going to tell you right now, if I found out any of this episode was a simulation other than the beginning of the episode, I am not going to be a happy camper. And you shouldn't be either, because you don't like dream shit.
I don't. But I think Bernard getting killed could be a simulation, because Bernard has foreseen his own death many, 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 many times, right?
Right.
He's foreseen his own death a billion times. He dies every time. And, you know, when he was looking at that tablet, he could have been watching, he was talking to someone, he could have been talking to himself, right? Or to Christina or someone, I don't know. But I think that could be a simulation. But, yeah, I'll be mad, too. Yes, I'm mad. That, like, to me, that's like cheap storytelling, right? Oh, it's a simulation.
Yeah.
It was all a dream. Bobby Ewing woke up and it was all a dream.
I mean,
things I liked. I like the whole William Man in Black business. And I like that even when he was, like, trapped in that thing, in that cage, as he called it, like, he was still himself to the very end, right?
Yes.
And after he gets stabbed, he smiles because he's not going to be trapped anymore.
Well,
yeah. He
finally got what he wanted.
On. Yes. But he's also going to live on. Like, he believes that the robot is, he says, I've infected you and I'm going to, like, you know, like, he believes that he, basically that he's going to live on as the robot version of himself is so close. I mean, that was the whole point in the beginning. Like, how much did Man in Black's father-in-law, whose name I forget, the Scottish guy, was the original guy they were trying to upload his consciousness to a robot, right?
Yeah.
And that was, like, kind of the goal of Delos in the beginning. So, I mean, so I liked that scene, and I liked Man in Black becoming, like, the main villain again. Like, Hale was a pretty good villain, but it's always been Man in Black, and I don't think anybody really sat well with Man in Black being turned into Hale's lapdog. Right?
No.
Like, it's good to see him unleashed. So that'll be good. So, yeah, I guess it's coming down to him versus Dolores, but I'm with you. Like, what could another season, like, can't they wrap it up next week?
Yeah. I'd love it. wrap it up and that's it.
Wrap it up and cancel.
Surprise, it's the final season.
Yeah. Yeah, especially once you shoot everyone in the head. You know, like Charlotte made a huge deal in the beginning of the episode when she says to Caleb, 1 7-gram bullet in your pearl and that's it for you. And I
right.
don't know if I would bring you back, she said, which I didn't think you could be brought back after your pearl was ruined. That's the whole point of your pearl, right?
Right.
Unless they can duplicate your pearl, which how could they? And so I felt like that was put in there in the beginning to sort of, so when she gets shot in the head later, is that to signal to us as an audience, like, yeah, she's really dead.
Yeah, I don't understand what else is left to tell. I mean, the way the story has evolved, you're at your end game. What else
yep.
are you going to do? You can't up the stakes any further.
Right? And I don't feel there's really space for these characters to evolve anymore. Like, Hale can't evolve
no.
anymore. They've written Hale into a corner. Man in Black is like, he can't change. I mean, part of his whole story is that he can't change. That's the whole point, is that he is who he
right.
is, right? And Maeve, like, had a great evolution over several episodes, but she's at her peak. She wants to go to Sublime and do with her daughter, right? I mean,
yeah.
what's sad is that she can't go to the Sublime if she's shot in the Pearl, unless Bernard
yeah.
or someone could send her there. Like, if this doesn't end with Maeve in the Sublime, like, fuck you, HBO, right? Like, give that girl a happy ending, for God's sake.
You know what the problem is at this point? You know, it's something we got to remember. This is a product of Christopher Nolan and family. And sometimes, Chris, you know, I know he's an executive
yeah.
producer and he's directed a couple episodes. I'm pretty sure that his brother and sister-in-law write most of it. But
mm-hmm.
Christopher Nolan has become very problematic. I mean, and he's done it in the past, too, and it's worked. But a lot of people feel like Tenet. Sometimes he does stuff just for the sake of doing it to give that little twist that, you know, that doesn't always
yeah.
work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I kind of feel like that's what we're seeing now. Like,
yeah, I think you're right.
I don't see how, I mean, I feel like there's going to be a season 5, but I don't see how.
Yeah, I don't know how they go, further. Because I just don't know where these characters or where this world can go from here, right? I guess we'll see next week. Maybe, I mean, you and I have a history of being like, as you said earlier in this episode, in this podcast, bad season, bad season, bad season, excellent ending.
Yeah.
So.
You know what, I mean, even with an excellent ending, it doesn't need another season. And I hope
yeah.
it's an excellent ending, but, and if there is another season,
right.
I'm going to watch it, because I need to see this through to the end, you know, but
mm-hmm.
I'm
yeah.
not seeing where it could possibly go at this point, so.
Yeah, me too.
I think
All
we
right.
should probably move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Move on here.
You want to do Paper Girls or Moonhaven? Or
let's
Moonhaven,
do Paper Girls.
Sandman.
Let's do Paper Girls.
All right.
So we watched three episodes of Paper Girls.
You want to talk about messing with my head. Jesus Christ. And I've got all kinds of theories. But I don't think
okay.
any of them are right. But I also don't think any of them are wrong. Holy crap.
Yeah.
I got to say, I'm enjoying this a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yep.
I mean, not that I thought I was not going to like it. But it's really... Oh, you know what? I got to say one more thing about Westworld. I thought that was,
mm-hmm.
for the first time we actually had, I thought that was a great closing song, The Man Who Stole the World. That was very
oh,
fitting
yes.
for what was going
it
on.
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was perfect.
So just so you know where we're at, because you've seen the whole thing, right? Paper Girls?
Paper Girls? No, I'm not watching ahead. I've read not all the comics. I've read a bunch of the comics. I'm not watching ahead. I'm sticking with you guys on this.
Well, I know you'd done some interviews and stuff, so I didn't know how far you had watched already. Anyway.
Yeah.
So I gotta say, I really like the, I don't like it, but I do like it, the confusion of, is this just a time travel show? Is it time travel with alternate realities? Is it, what the hell is going on? I mean, we have a guy, you know, I mean, I really like Larry until we realize that Larry's an asshole.
Yeah.
And tricked the girls into doing what he wanted.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, I love the dynamic with the girls, and apparently they are 12, because Aaron said they were 12 a couple times. I thought they were 14.
Yeah.
I thought I heard that.
Yeah.
I thought I heard that earlier in one of the episodes, that they were 14. Apparently not. Apparently they're 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said something about fifth grade. Max said something about fifth grade. So, yeah, that kind of puts them in line to be 12.
Well, yeah, and the whole, like, tampon issue in episode 5 kind of gives away their age a little bit also, right?
I'm sorry. Yes, I have a daughter and a wife and everything, but I, you know, from what I understand, it's different for every girl, so who knows?
Yes, it's different for every girl, and this was quite a whole, I mean, this, you know, for girls, this probably rings true to be like, you know, she's getting her first period, she's never, you know, had a bike tampons, and I love
I gotta say, that scene was great.
That scene was fantastic, especially when they're like, do you need regular or super, and Max, like, obviously, the size of your vagina, I'd need a super. Like, they're all, like, you know, we're digressing to that, but that scene is part of a bunch of good scenes, I think, in these episodes about the kids that are sprinkled in there, I think, really well.
And you know, the funny thing about Max saying that, you know, about her vagina being super is, as she gets older, she'll realize that's not a good thing. No woman has ever been like, I have this huge vagina.
Yeah. Yes. Right. It was just a great scene, and it's like so like being 12 also, because they're like, so like they just like witnessed old Aaron getting killed by Rock'em's like giant transformer robots, right? By basically Pacific Rim is kind of what I thought about when watching that. And they're in the middle of like some sort of a intergenerational time war, and then they're all totally like thrown for, you know, there are a bunch of scenes like that. These bonding scenes with the kids are really good, which we should, I mean, well, there's much to talk about in the previous two episodes also. So it's blowing your mind and you have theories.
I don't know if theories may not be the right word. Confusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, I got to I don't know what my theory is. I feel like, well, actually, one thing I thought was, okay, this can explain why they have no memory of any of this. As older, you know, like Aaron doesn't remember anything because when they go back to 1988, they get caught
99.
In the mind wipe. And
They go back to 99, not 88, right?
No, I know. But no, but the plan was to go back to 88, the night they left.
Yeah.
My thought is they end up, even though the first time around they didn't get caught up, you know, they didn't lose their memories when the mind wipe came, but when they go back, they're going to be close enough to it or whatever, that's why they can't remember anything.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And that's,
yep. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But being that they didn't even make it back to 88, at some point they still got to make it back to 88 for all this other stuff to happen. But that's what makes me keep thinking, I feel like there's got to be some kind of alternate reality involved here. It's a very different time travel type show, and we're still learning the rules and everything. So it could turn out to be linear, but it doesn't feel linear. It feels like there's too many inconsistencies with what we've seen for it not to have some sort of alternate reality. Like, the third episode we watched tonight with KJ, we see 23-year-old KJ, who we were given the impression from her parents in the first episode, second episode, when the Priori goes to her parents' house and beats the living crap out of them, like you pointed out, there was no pictures of her older just as her as younger, and the mother was like, it's impossible that you found this hockey stick because, you know, we never hear why she says it's impossible, but it's implied that KJ isn't around anymore.
Right.
You know, but yet we see 23-year-old KJ, so we know she did grow up. So it's like,
right.
I feel like there's, we're missing an important piece. And, you know, I mean, we got three episodes left, which will, you know, which will bring us to the finale that we'll talk about next week. But, yeah. Something's
right.
missing.
But
here.
That, yeah. So that, I mean, that's really, I noticed that too in the show, the way they are setting that up. Like, I definitely got that feeling last week that she disappeared. They're like, there's no way you found that, right? And then, also, it's not clear what the prior is to them, right? Because they kind of cut away from some, I felt maybe some implied violence against KJ's parents before she leaves. And then this week, she's 23 and she's, but the dog instantly, the dog recognized her, right? The dog totally recognized young KJ as the same person, which I can't believe no one at this party recognized her, but whatever. But I guess because she never disappeared. Yeah, that was really interesting. Like, and that lends itself to alternate timeline. I mean, as did the whole Aaron thing. And the Mac thing. So the previous episode, I think it was episode 4, maybe, focused a lot on, or 3, was Mac going to live with her brother, which I really loved that episode. I loved all of that. I loved that whole interaction. Right? And hello, come to find out that she died of cancer, right? She like got cancer and died when she was 14, 16, something like that,
16.
Right? Like that was crazy. And that's what set her brother on the right track and turned her drunken stepmother into like a great mom or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And in the, so in like the first issues of the comic book, it's a little clearer that her, so you know, in episode 1, when the purple light first comes, they all run to hide in Mac's house and they get the gun. So in the comic book, Mac's stepmother is there and she's a total drunk. Mm. And she pulls out the gun to try to kill herself. She does kill herself and shoots Aaron in the process. That's how that happens.
Wow.
And she's like a, So all that, I really like that. And I really like seeing how Mac kind of wants to do it, right? Like Mac would have been willing to stay and live with her brother as his fake cousin, daughter, or whatever.
That was
and
funny.
Have this life. It was funny. You know, it's interesting. She is constantly so mean to KJ. You're rich. Your father's a banker. You live in a big house. You have pretty dresses. But that's the whole world her brother has, and you can see she really wants that, right? She really would have done it.
I forgot what I was saying. I completely lost my train. Oh,
sorry.
No. I got it back, actually. You know, and that reminds me of KJ. You know, like, it's funny because, you know, Mac's constantly on her about, you know, having nice things and being rich and everything, which she's clearly better off than the other three girls. You know, like in this episode 6, she said, you know, Mac's making fun of her and she's like, you know, ooh, the castle. She's like, we don't live in a castle. She goes, I just have parents who care what people think. You know. But the thing that surprised me was, first of all, she knows how to ride a dirt bike, which I was like, okay, this, you know, and she plays field hockey, you know, so she's, you know, she's not the princess that, Mac is trying to make her to be, you know, so it's like the more we learn about KJ, the more we realize that she is nowhere near the, you know, she actually seems like quite a bit, you know, the more we learn about it, the more I feel like she's quite a bit of a tomboy, even maybe even more so than Mac is, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when I was, you know, and my fucking idiot son, fucking Artie, Jesus. Like, when she's riding, she takes the dirt bike, and I was like, that's impressive. I was like, she's 12, and she, you know, and she knows how to ride a dirt bike. And he goes, and Artie goes, what, it's a bike? I'm like, really? I was like, have you ever heard of something called a clutch? it's just the funniest conversation between us. I'm like, sometimes you simplify things that you don't have any friggin' clue. I'm like, you don't just jump on it and go. It's not like that. He goes, but it's 2019. I was like, it doesn't matter.
You could put that
like,
boy on
the bike. You have to have prior knowledge.
Yeah.
I was like, you need prior knowledge of how to shift with your foot.
Yeah.
And of course he says,
know.
Why do you need to shift? And then he goes, with your foot? Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah. He's like half too smart for his own good, that kid.
Yeah.
Not as smart as he thinks he is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And KJ also is, so, I mean, it's clear that, I mean, we talked last week how it seemed that KJ maybe had a little bit of a crush on Mac, right? And so we find out that she grows up, and when she's 23, she has a girlfriend. This is a kid who maybe is questioning her, wondering what her sexuality is, right? And so she, she did not grow up to be the person that her parents wanted her to be, probably. I mean, I assume they probably wanted her to, like, get a husband. But she still is not telling them. She still is, like, afraid of them or whatever, right? It makes me kind of excited for next week because now we've seen, like, Erin met adult Erin. Oh, and we met Missy. We met her sister Missy, right? Erin and Missy had that sort of interaction about selling the house. And it turned out that Missy, who I think Missy was really set up to, Erin made her sound like she, Missy was the heavy, Missy was, like, the bad person, right? And
yeah.
Turns out that Missy's like, thanks for cheating me out of spending time with my mom when she was dying, right? Which was kind of, like, harsh and great to see, but you see, like, this kind of, I don't know, a new side of Erin, right? I felt kind of bad when she died. Did you feel bad when she died? I felt bad when she died. Could be one of those things.
I mean, but she went out, first of all, she went out like a badass, and she sacrificed herself, you know? So, like, I mean, like Mac says to young Erin later, she's like, essentially, you saved us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the person you become, you saved us. So, I mean, it's a time travel show, so who knows how it's actually going to end up. I feel like this is one of those stories where I don't even know, like I said, we're still learning the rules and everything, but I feel like where it ends, it's not going to be anything like where it began. Like, I could totally see adult Erin growing, you know, surviving. Again, I feel like it's doing a good job because it's really making my brain hurt. In a good way, not like Westworld. So it's definitely interesting, and like I said, I'm enjoying it a lot more than I was expecting to. All the girls are likable, and they're 12, so I, you know, on the verge of 13, you know, so like I like. They're in bickering, you know. I like that, you know, they kind of all are getting on Tiffany, though, you know. But at the same time, I'm loving Tiffany having that hubris of, you know, I'm the smartest person in the room. And Tiffany's always the smartest person in the room, which isn't necessarily a problem. And she's right about a lot of things. But as, you know, young teenagers do, they tend to go about telling people that they're right the wrong way. You know, and even some of the scenes, like, you know, like when they were in the house and they were doing nothing aside from eating and just sitting there. And, you know, it's like, even that, those scenes didn't, like, some shows you're like, oh my God, just get on with it. You know, like, this is boring. it didn't feel boring.
Yeah.
It was still, you know, it's still the episode. It went with the flow of the episode, you know?
Yeah.
And the stuff with Larry, like, you know, even the stuff with Larry, like, and it was so funny. I said to Artie when Aaron and Larry were playing a couple for Missy, I was like, oh, Aaron's going to get a boyfriend after all. And then it turned out he was an asshole, and they both died.
No happy ending for them. So some of this is not going the way – some of this that happened in the last – so they're diverging a little bit from the comics, which is fine. There's some stuff they're doing that I think is good. And, like, for example, when KJ – the way KJ, like, learns about her future sexuality in this episode is not really the same way it happens in the comic books. But it doesn't really matter if it's the same way, because the point is that she – sees something in the future that, like, makes her think about this, right? And so some other things are a little bit different, but I want to ask you about is the prioress and the grandfather and their army and all that stuff. And also, so Naldo and Heck were spoken about a lot in this episode, and I wonder, like, if it took – did you understand who they were? Like, that, to me, wasn't as well done as it could have been, I thought.
I got the feeling that they used to be partners, like the way they were talking, like he was talking about himself in the third person.
Right. The grandfather.
So, the grandfather, is that what they call him?
That's that guy's name. That guy's name is the grandfather. That guy who's like guy who's the boss. He actually looks a lot older in the comic book. He's called the grandfather.
Yeah, I didn't catch his name. Yeah, I didn't catch his name. If he had that parental, he was just like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah. They talked through a couple episodes about Heck and Naldo, which I felt like they never really, like, those were the two guys from the first episode, right, who, like, save Aaron and have the time machine and all that. In the first issue of the comic book, they are a little more, they interact with the girls a lot more and have a much more conversation with them, and they give their names, and the girls are really clear that these are Heck and Naldo, and they're, like, characters in, like, the first two issues before they get killed, and they're more, they interact with the girls more, and so you're not like, wait, who are those two guys? But the grandfather, I mean, he does sort of appear the way he does, but and so there was that part that was explained in one part of these three episodes. I forget when. I guess Larry explains it that it's an intergenerational war, right? It's the old guard, they're called, the old guard versus the old watch. They're called the old watch.
The old watch.
The old watch versus the SFT. SFT.
I think it's STF.
STF, yeah. So, I don't know. They haven't, like, gotten into it that much, but, I mean, it's interesting, the idea that it's an intergenerational kind of thing, like young versus, that's kind of interesting, right? Like, I don't want, they haven't given us too much about it. I don't know if you had any, like, initial kind of thoughts about it, but. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's a typical sci-fi battle where, like, both sides believe they're right, and, you know, both think that they are, I don't know, I don't even know if they even really, like, have a philosophy that we know of yet, but they both believe they're right, their ideology is correct, right? Although, I'm going to tell you, in the comic book, the grandfather, when he appears, he's wearing a shirt that has, so he's wearing a shirt from a band in this episode, right? I forget what he's wearing, but in the comic book, he's wearing a t-shirt with an apple with, like, a bite out of it. which is like a Beatles thing, right? It's like it looks like at first you're like, oh, is that Apple computer? But it's the Beatles, Apple Records has the bite out of it, right? And that also is the logo that's on the little computer that Aaron finds. I guess they're maybe not using it because Apple might sue them. I don't know. But anyway, they have this like logo that's on all their stuff. But we don't know what their goals are or what their deal is or why he's in charge or what's happening or anything or what even their deal is, right? And the whole dinosaur thing. What do you think about the dinosaur thing?
That was funny. That was just funny. They feed people the dinosaurs.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll see more dinosaurs. In the comic book, dinosaurs are introduced pretty early. I mean, you see them, but the girl's like, what the hell is that? It's a monster. But it sort of begs the question, like, where did they get? Did they go to the pet? Like, did they have the ability to go to prehistoric times to fetch a dinosaur to be their pet? To be their, for them to fly on?
That's what I'm
on?
Assuming.
Right? Like, that opens up a whole bunch of their time travel capabilities. And what they're up for. So, anyway, I'm excited for next week because I'd like to see what Tiffany grows up to be because Tiffany in some ways is really cool, but in some ways she's a know-it-all pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, she's so convinced, Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think teenage Tiffany, or, 20-something Tiffany is going to be similar. I mean, I think she's got a good brain, so I'm sure there's going to be something, in that vein.
Yeah.
I mean, I think going to Tiffany is probably a smart choice because anything, if young Tiffany has figured out this much, older Tiffany is definitely going to be able to maybe put a few more pieces together.
Like maybe she's in the STF or maybe she's like in the old watch or maybe she, yeah. So young Tiffany's a little annoying in the way she's like, oh, we got to go see my old self because I'm the smartest and I can help us and I can figure it out and all this, right? Like, she's a little bit annoying. Like, most 12-year-olds are annoying. It's not, but so I'm interested to see, I mean, she's a scientist, we know, from looking herself up. It kind of would be, it'd be kind of cool also to see her be, we're not going to see her be a sad sack because future Aaron was the sad sack, right? And that's been done. But and they're in 99,
well,
so
I will...
if they're in 99, then she can only be about 23.
Yeah.
Which would make her just starting out in her career.
Right. And not for nothing, I don't think she's going to be – it's going to be interesting to see where she is because so far – Aaron, like you said, Aaron's a sad sack, not at all, nowhere near what Aaron thought her life was going to be like.
Mac is
KJ's thinking that she's going to business school, wants to go to business school, finds out that her future self is going to film school,
Yep.
So I think it's going to be interesting. I think KJ's still going to have the brain. But I wouldn't be surprised to find out that she's not going to MIT or something,
Tiffany, yeah, that she's not.
Or Tiffany.
To go down the path. Yeah. I mean, that seems kind of the point, that none of them, their path went the way they thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
That's part of the whole point of it, yeah. So, well, I'm glad you're liking it. These three episodes, it's definitely, the first two episodes, I thought didn't land as hard as I would have liked. And it really, I thought, in these next three episodes, picked up a lot. All right, so next week we'll do the last three and finish out the season, right?
Yes. Yep.
All right.
Yep. So next week we'll have finished up Westworld and Paper Girls, which is good because, of course, we're adding Moonhaven's already done.
Yeah.
And that's good, though, because we got She-Hulk on the 18th, which means that'll be
not next week's podcast,
but the following week.
Yep.
And, Lock and Key, which we'll have next week, and Resident Aliens on its way back, too.
Yeah.
Very busy for a minute.
Yep.
So, all right.
So this brings us to the Sandman.
So what did you think?
I thought it was fantastic. I thought it has been rumored to cost up to $15 million per episode, and it looks like it. It looks really good. Right? I mean, it is fantastic looking. I thought, and I think all the performances are really great. The casting director really deserves probably a huge amount of credit for casting everyone so well in this thing. I mean, everyone from the main character. I mean, Tom Sturridge he's perfect as Morpheus, I think, as Dream.
Yeah.
Perfect. He's like 99%, right?
Yeah. He looks like he walked straight off out of the comic book.
He is fantastic. I mean, Charles Dance is always great. He was fantastic in this episode, in the first episode. I think all the people around him, I think it's really well cast, really good looking, really great effects, great CGI, great. I mean, they did a great job with bringing a lot of it to the screen. And I'm not fully familiar. I haven't read all of it like you have. I'm not fully familiar with the entire thing. But, I mean, I think they did. I love the Corinthian. I think Boyd Holbrook is like, great as the Corinthian. I love them all. And we should pause here because Jamie did want us to mention that she interviewed both Tom Sturridge, who played Dream, and Vivian Ocampong, I can't pronounce her name, who plays Lucienne, his like assistant in his kingdom. And both those interviews are up, right? And Jamie wanted to make sure that everybody knows they can watch them, read them. But no, I thought it was great, and I thought these two episodes were really good and did a good job of, like, you know, any opening episode is about kind of world building and character building and establishing, like, where we are and how it's all going to work. And I thought that worked really well without a ton of exposition. Like, Dream is not a guy who talks a lot necessarily, right?
Yeah.
He's a man of few words, and when he has words, he's usually, like, whispering and muttering.
Yeah.
So you, as someone who's read the entire series and has a little bit more of a personal relationship to the comics, what did you think about it?
I thought it was good.
It's not a comic, it's a graphic novel, but yeah.
I thought it was good. It one thing that was surprising was the Corinthian, while he has a fairly large story arc in the comics, I was a little surprised to see him being so focused on in this. So that's a little different, but I got no problem with that. One thing that I thought was kind of fun, because when the comic starts, Dream is already captured, whereas the show actually showed us him getting captured. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because that's not something that anybody has ever seen before. So I liked that. It's also...
That's the kind of thing that maybe is important for a television show in a way that it isn't for a graphic novel.
Right.
Maybe, right?
Yeah. You know, also with his artifacts that he had, you know, his tools, how they end up where they end up. I thought that was, you know, that's something else that's not in the comic, but definitely works also. And gives us Jolie Richardson,
who
so that's going to be interesting.
I thought she was great also, and I thought she was a good older version of the younger Ethel, who I happen to have my thing open so I can tell you she's played by Niamh Walsh, but Jolie Richardson was great, and I had read maybe it was in Vulture, where they were like, seriously, Jolie Richardson is 2 years younger than David Doulas. How is she playing his mother? Oh, because she has like the, you know, she hasn't aged. Or she's aging slowly or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing David Doulas, who we all know from the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, I can't.
Can't wait for that storyline, for the John Dee story?
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, very excited for the John B storyline.
Yeah. I like
and a little side note, I feel like they probably couldn't get permission because Sandman has an interesting history. It started in the DC universe. Like Batman actually appears in one of the comics first in one panel in the comics. There's references to other superheroes and stuff from the DC universe. And Arkham Asylum is actually in the comic, which is where John Dee is in the comics. But clearly the asylum that he's in the show in the second episode is not Arkham Asylum, which I have a feeling that they probably didn't get the rights for that, for Arkham Asylum. But
maybe.
I just thought it was, because the history is interesting because it started with DC and then it switched and then it, the comic moved to Vertigo. There was some problems, you know, DC has always been kind of like, oh, you can't do that. Okay, we'll go somewhere else then. type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, they're still associated with DC, but not really. It's a very convoluted mess that I don't have all the info about. So that was just fun that, you know, you see these, you know, the storylines stay the same, but they could, you know, there was a part of me kind of like that was hoping to see the Arkham Asylum gates, but I had a feeling that that wasn't going to be involved.
So, I read that a decision was made somewhere along the way to sort of divorce this from the DC universe. And I looked at this interview with that Neil Gaiman gave, like, just the other day to comicbook.com. And he said, like, look, yeah, it started in the DC universe, but as Sandman goes on, it wanders off into, like, its own direction, which it totally does, right? Like,
right.
It goes off into all these.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just became less and less connected, he says, and it wasn't really the DC universe anymore. And he also said, like, he didn't really want to do a show where you had to read all these old comics. Like, Sandman, the comic, it's like a 30-year-old graphic novel, right? 32, 35 years old, right? It's from the 80s.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's like, it's so old. Yeah, and he's like, look, it's so old. And he did say in this interview on comicbook.com that the Justice League was, like, really different back then with different people. And so it wouldn't even maybe be, like, DC that most casual people would understand.
Right.
And so they just were like, forget it, we're not doing it. Make it its own thing.
Yeah. Which is, it's better for it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't, you know, to me, I don't, I mean, these big universe-expanding things. It's better for it, actually, because look at the DC universe kind of implosion in recent months and years with things getting canceled and not happening, right? Like, don't be associated with that. And it's not necessary to, like, you know me, I don't like my superheroes mixed with magic. Anyway, so, yeah, so, I mean, other things to like, I mean, I like the whole, so as you explained, that whole origin story of how he's captured is not really in the opening book, which is all I've read, Nocturnes and Preludes, or Preludes and Nocturnes, it's called, right? That's all I've read. But I liked all that, and I liked, for a guy who is captured in the glass thing and doesn't talk for, like, almost the entirety of the first episode, he is a really compelling character, I think, and really interesting. And you can't, you know, take your eyes off him. His look, I mean, his look is incredible that it matches the comic so much, but the graphic novel so much, but also, like, you just, like, when Tom Sturridge is on screen, you can't look away from his cheekbones at all, right? And it's like, he's like 1980s, like, Robert Smith emo hair. I mean, I loved all of it. I like Lucienne, I think, right? I like the, I mean, I love Cain and Abel and poor Gregory.
Oh my
right?
God. I had, oh my God. Cain and Abel were amazing. I was so excited. Like I saw the, even before I saw Cain and Abel, I saw the house and I was like, I knew where we were going. I was like, ooh. And Artie's looking at me like, what the hell?
Oh, he hasn't seen it?
Huh? No, he was watching it with me, but he hasn't read it. So,
oh, wow.
I love Cain and Abel, and it was every time Cain killed Abel, I just laughed. And Artie's like, "Why are you laughing?" I'm like, "Cause you don't know. It's just awesome." It's like Cain comes up with like the things that set Cain off in the comics, and he kills him. And the way he does it, it's just like, and poor Abel's
and
like, "Oh man."
Abel's always like, well, every time he kills me, he always buries me. He always, right? He's always like,
yeah.
Like Abel is so like.
He never kills me before breakfast, so we're good for a while.
Right? He's so happy-go-lucky about it. He's so great. And Gregory, and they actually, so in that scene where, you know, it's a little bit of like the kinder, gentler Dream in that scene, right, where Dream is like, I'm really sorry, I need Gregory. He gives Gregory a choice, sort of, right? Like,
yeah.
He gives Gregory, he says, I need your help, but if Gregory said no, would he have taken Gregory anyway? Probably, because, I mean, one thing that maybe is a little different or not played up yet is Dream being a little bit more of a vengeful kind of a person, right? Like he,
well,
like so much of the comic book is about his journey. I mean, so I've only read part of it, but my understanding is that a lot of it is about his journey to he has an existential journey over the course of the novels, right?
Yeah.
And he can really be kind of a dick. And as many immortals
yeah.
are, right? As immortals and gods are all dicks, pretty much. And we see this little bit of a kinder, gentler, not kinder, gentler. I shouldn't say kinder, gentler, but kinder. He regards Gregory as a friend, a creation that he loves, maybe, right? Which we should not take as his total personality going forward.
No. The whole Gregory thing, though, did surprise me. I wasn't sure what direction they were going with that, because Gregory, he doesn't do that in the comic.
He doesn't go to Gregory
in the comic,
say.
No. In the comic, he just goes right to the Fates, asks his questions, and then starts collecting his tools.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised by that. But, you know, I mean, so far the changes they've made, whatever. I think it's going to be interesting to see the whole how the Corinthian storyline follows through, given that they've made the Corinthian a lot more important than he is in his story arc.
Yeah, I mean, he's being set up, so far, he's set up as the primary antagonist. Even more than, you know, more than the, what's his name, who imprisoned him, right? He's a nightmare who's been unleashed on the world and has become a serial killer.
Yeah.
Because he's whatever, because he's unleashed and because he's a nightmare and whatever. He's sort of, I think, being set up as the big bad of the season, much more than, well, I mean, obviously, I mean, he was in prison, but all those guys are dead now, so can't.
Not true. Alex is not dead. Alex is perpetually dreaming.
He's in the
forever.
Dream. He's in the sleeping sickness or whatever they're calling it, right?
Yeah.
Whatever they called it back then, yeah. That's right. He's going to sleep for a century or more, which is horrible. But yeah. So the Corinthian is like the main guy. I mean, I liked him. He had that very like he had all that southern charm with, like, menace underneath it kind of thing, right? And he always wears sunglasses because he's got those, like, star eyes, right, is why he wears the sunglasses, which...
Well, yeah, his eyes are teeth.
right. Yeah, his eyes are teeth. That's right, his eyes are teeth. I forgot about that. He's being set up as the... And this is not really a linear story, right? Like, Julie Richardson is also from episode 2, you'd think, like, oh, Julie Richardson, she's going to be, like, also, he's going to be trying to get his stuff back from her. But she's like, no, I gave it all away. I don't have the stuff. Like, stop bothering me. And the story is really more like a series of chapters of Dream's journey to try to collect his stuff, right? Like, that's what we should be expecting going forward.
It's going to be interesting because, I mean, like, a lot of the stories, Dream really isn't even the main focal point, you know?
Right.
Like, he's in every story, but, I mean, there's characters that I know we're going to meet this season that have, you know, their entire own stories, and Dream pops up at the last second to have something to do with it. You know,
right.
So it's gonna be interesting to see how they do this with a TV show. I mean, I feel like the first season we're gonna see a lot of Dream, obviously. As it, you know, if it gets picked up for season 2 and as it continues and everything, it's gonna be interesting to see how the fans, like, how non-comic book fans feel when, you know, a new story starts. And you go through an entire episode, and there's no Dream. And, you know, and that's going to be the true test. You know,
like,
where
can,
you know, you're going to get, you know, like, what?
Like, can fans really get around a really, like, non-linear, a really atypical sort of storytelling where we don't have a character who's on an arc for 8 episodes, right? And we're trying to get from 1 to 8 or 1 to 10, and have some sort of development and some progress happen, where so much of this is like, you know, Dream, who's age endless. They're called the Endless, right? Who can travel across like eons and drop in it and really be, he could really be watching a story and not really participating in it. And that could be an episode, right? Or as you said, he could drop in for the last 5 minutes. Or he could drop in for the last 5 minutes on something that's already happened. Or he could, like, we're not going to see, like, a 10-episode storyline where he's trying to get the ruby and at the end he gets the ruby. And season 2 is 10 episodes and at the end he gets the helm. And, right? That's not what this is.
No, that's not,
be.
No. No.
Right? Yeah, that's not the, and so can people, can non-comic book fans get behind that? And also, can comic book fans, like this is one of the major, I mean, it's a major, major development in the art form, right? Like this is a landmark graphic novel, Sandman. It was long thought to be unfilmable. Like, there have been so many, like, failed projects, right? So many readers have such strong feelings about it that, like, some people don't want to watch it at all because, like, I can't watch it. It's a perfect book. I can't watch it. Or they're going to see one thing that's different and be like, I'm so pissed off I can never watch it again. Or they'll be like, if they're smart, be like, this is a different animal and I need to watch it and get behind it. So
we've talked about this many a times where when you go from one medium to another, you know, anytime you adapt something for television or a movie, there's certain changes you're going to have to make simply because things do not always adapt over piece by piece. You know, some things are not going to work on TV that you can do in the comic book or a novel or a video game or whatever the case is, you know. You know, we've talked about this at length in a lot of things. You know, we've talked about it with The Walking Dead and with, like, Negan. Negan's awesome in the comics. His corny cracks and one-liners are great for the comic. You hear JDM say it, and you're like, that was bad.
Yep. You know, yeah. It doesn't always translate.
And that's not even taking on the major sci-fi element of something like Sandman, where, like, I think graphic novels can be harder than, like, a fantasy novel, like, I don't know, Game of Thrones, where you have a written description of a dragon and you see it in your mind and you develop your own thing. But in Sandman, you have a graphic picture of what Constantine looks like. Or what? I mean,
you know what,
Constantine's going to be
a great thing,
Luminous, right?
What's that? Lucifer? Yeah.
People are going to look different. Things are going to look different. Like, his whole kingdom. Like, you have a visual reference in a graphic novel that cannot go perfectly to TV, and yet when it doesn't look like what you saw on the page, are you pissed as a reader?
Well,
it shouldn't be, but some will.
One thing about, and this is true of a lot of comics that have been around for a while, but Sandman has a lot of different artistic styles throughout its run.
Yes. Multiple different artists worked on it, right?
Yeah. So there's lots of different visions. I mean, Dream has always generally stayed pretty close to the same. But even he, because of the styles of some of the artists, like, you know, there was, you know, some of the comics were very, I remember there was one, like, the artist that was doing it was a very intentional, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it seemed like none of the drawings were ever finished, but it was an intentional thing, you know, obviously. You know, type of thing. So
when that would come to the screen, you would obviously.
I think when it comes to the screen, it makes it easier to accept different versions of people simply because if you've read the comics, you've already seen, you know, 7 or 8 different comic drawn versions of that character.
Yeah.
So when you get them on the screen, you're like, okay, whatever. It's just another interpretation of that character, you know, especially because there's a lot of, there's one gender swap I know of, but there's lots of inclusive changes with characters, as far as you know, race. My whole thing with that, whenever people complain about it or anything, is always people are people. I don't give a shit who's playing the part as long as they're doing a good job playing the part. You know,
right.
I mean, obviously, you're going to have some things, you're going to have certain things where, like, you know, having a black person play a Nazi probably wouldn't work. if you're doing a World War II movie, but you know.
But, you know, it was written in the 80s, and it is populated by a lot of white men, and you're right. Like, other people can play those characters just as well.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Pretty much. So I thought it was great. I thought they're off to a really great start. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was
definitely
But I don't know enough to be considered an expert, and they're already, like, blending in stuff. I think that occurs later than I have read, and, I mean, I don't know, but I think they might be, and it just, there's a, like, I think that's a great story. It was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch some more. Now, here's the next question. So, we've got 10 episodes of this. And then we've got, I'm looking right now, actually, we've got, I don't know how many episodes of, that other show.
Lock and Key?
Which actually, Lock and Key. I don't know how many episodes there are of that. I can't look, because I guess it comes out today, but I think it comes out at, like, midnight. Wait, it's already after midnight. Well, but midnight Pacific, so it won't come out till, like, 3. But I got to feel there's 8 to 10 episodes of that. So the question is, how many episodes of Sandman are we doing for next week?
There's 10 altogether. Here's the thing, just to keep up with it, it's been out for a while.
It came out on this past Friday.
Yeah, so people are probably watching through it. So, I mean, at least two. Maybe,
well, yeah, obviously at least two.
All right,
let's look at it this way. So we've got one Westworld to watch. We've got three Paper Girls to watch. At least two Sandman and at least two Lock and Key. So that's seven shows we all need to watch by next Tuesday at the moment.
So maybe we'll stick it with two.
Two for now, and then maybe we can up it to three and three after we have, because we'll be done with Westworld and Paper Girls next week.
Yes, and something like Lock and Key could probably consume three hours, would have maybe less to talk about than 2 hours of Sandman.
Right. I guess we'll have to play by ear. So right now we're going to do two Lock and Key
Resident
and
Alien
two Sandman next week.
Plus Resident Alien is next week or in 2 weeks, Resident Alien is back also.
I think that's in 2 weeks, and then we've got, in 2 weeks also, She-Hulk.
Yeah, and I'll be traveling probably after that, so I have a week off from the podcast. August, 29th or 30th, whatever that podcast is, I won't be here. But we can talk about that, and we'll schedule it all, and people
we'll figure it all out.
Have to care about that. But next week we've got, so we'll do two Sandman, three Paper Girls, two Lock and Key. And we'll finish Westworld next week.
And one Westworld.
All right. All right. Sounds like a plan.
All right. It sounds like a plan.
All right.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Hey, AJ, my dad's going to the Met game tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
My dad.
You should have fun because they're playing the Reds.
I know. My dad and my brother and my nephew, like three generations of men all named William, are going to the game tomorrow. It should be a good day.
Cool.
So, I don't know. I'm just telling you that because, hey, I've been watching more Mets than I know what to do with lately, including tonight. all right. On that note, see you next week.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Everybody have a great week. Talk to everybody later. Good night.